You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me on the line now from Maryland is Sasha. Sasha, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
So last week when you were on the show, we were talking about a number of Supreme Court decisions, including the buffer zones case. And then subsequently, after we recorded, the Hobby Lobby decision was finally released. And you had been on several weeks back or a couple months ago to talk about the possible outcomes that might be seen in such a decision. We now have that decision. So we should get into that and kind of the implications or suggested implications that may result from this. So the Politico summary was the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 in Burwell v. Hobby Lobby on Monday that for-profit employers with religious objections can opt out of providing contraception coverage under Obamacare. So pretty narrowly targeted, as we've discussed before, but potentially opening the door to more serious things. Sasha, what exactly do we know so far about this decision? What's the immediate impact?
Immediately, obviously, people who work for Hobby Lobby and the other corporation can't receive certain types of contraceptives under their health insurance plans. So part of the reason that they objected was they didn't necessarily object to one of the most popular forms of contraceptive, which is the oral contraceptive. They didn't have a problem with that. It was these other ones, including IUDs, and in some cases, the morning after pill, which they considered inducing abortion kind of drugs rather than contraceptive drugs, which the FDA has approved them as. So that was their main, I mean, that's the main effect that's going to fall into place first and foremost, but what a lot of people are worried about is obviously other corporations and other for-profit companies trying to line up and start making it a little bit more strict. Not that them denying these kinds of contraceptives isn't already kind of a violation of other people's rights, but it could go farther is what I think a lot of people are worried about and just be straight up denying people all types of contraceptives from for-profit corporations.
Yeah, now as you alluded to, this decision purports to only affect the four types of contraceptives specifically mentioned by the lawsuit. Very important to note that scientifically, as is currently understood by the scientific and medical science community, the four contraceptives discussed in the ruling do not, in fact, induce abortion, but the lawsuit alleged that it was their sincerely held religious belief that they do induce abortion. It wasn't even a lawsuit saying that it was their religious belief not to cover contraception or anything like that, because as Sasha mentioned, they still cover other things under their plan. It was that it was their sincerely held religious belief that these induce abortion despite the fact that they don't. And there had been some investigative journalism by Mother Jones and some other sites basically proving that their insurance plans used to cover this with no complaint even before the Affordable Care Act took effect. And then someone, a conservative group that likes doing these kind of lawsuits, approached them and asked if they wanted to be a test case by dropping it from their coverage and then taking it to the Supreme Court. And they went along with it. So this is a sincerely held religious belief going back about 2.5 years at the most. And again, it's a sincerely held religious belief that these things that don't cause abortion in their eyes do cause abortion. And that was the justification that they cited for not covering this, I guess. Whole bunch of different angles we could approach this from. I mean, there's so much to get into in this, really. Why don't we start off with the sincerely held religious belief angle, because we've already talked a little bit about that. Essentially, from what I've been reading, I guess the courts really don't like to make a direct ruling on whether or not someone's belief is sincerely held or quote-unquote correct, because even if, you know, a very small minority has some particular religious belief, in this case, that these things that don't cause abortion do cause abortion. If they rule on that, then they're worried that it becomes sort of a slippery slope to other rulings where they have to rule on, like, for example, whether or not evolution is correct and that the sincerely held religious belief in creationism is invalid. Not just that you can't teach it in schools, but that you can't have that belief or whatever. Like, I'm sure that that's the slippery slope fear that the justices have when they approach one of these religious, sincerely held religious belief cases. Had you seen anything on this particular angle?
I think a lot of what the justices that wrote, so Justice Ginsburg wrote the dissent, and a lot of what she noted was that the religious freedoms of the corporate owners trumped those of their employees. And, you know, their employees sincerely held religious beliefs that they should be able to use those sorts of things. But the Obama administration, the government as a whole, didn't really address that. They didn't really challenge the company's religious beliefs either because of, like you said, that slippery slope. But they kind of noted more like a blanket statement that requiring insurance plans to include this kind of coverage for contraception, it in general promotes public health and ensures that women have equal access to healthcare services that are necessary. They kind of went down the road where it's just good for the overall public need rather than trying to, I mean, it's one of those situations you don't really want to offend anyone, so.
Right. Now, you were mentioning about this tension between the employer's religious beliefs and the employee's religious beliefs. Now, apparently, I guess in the majority decision, they said that this kind of thing could only apply to, quote-unquote, closely held companies, which are a small group, usually family-owned, but a small group of owners, rather than like a publicly listed thing. Because even though I guess this court thinks that corporations are people, certain corporations are more people than others, because
right.
If it's not closely held, you can't have a religious belief over thousands of shareholders or something like that.
Mm-hmm. That law that, I mean, I can't remember what it's called right this instant, that Bill Clinton passed, though, about
Restoration of Religious Freedom Act, I think.
Right, and how they define these closely held companies. But it was never intended for companies like Hobby Lobby, which have chains across the United States and employ a lot of people, a lot more than I think they intended for these closely held companies to encompass.
Right, and I guess some business leaders had been very worried about this decision because it potentially could be argued as a precedent later to invalidate certain, I mean, it probably would never happen, but certain corporate legal protections for these bigger companies, the shareholder companies, where the board is not held directly liable for certain things, whereas now, oh, this means that you, as the leadership of the company, are the company, and therefore your views cut both ways or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the employer-employee relationship, so there seems to be this weird kind of conservative viewpoint being expressed quite loudly. And this, I mean, it goes back to the Sandra Fluke controversy for sure, but then has resurfaced in the aftermath of this, which is this argument of, well, no freebies and we shouldn't have to pay for your lifestyle and your behaviors and your contraceptives or whatever, blah, 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 blah. But it's like, that doesn't really understand the U.S. healthcare system very well, because the way that we've structured it is, instead of saying that you get your healthcare from the government, we say that employers can use healthcare benefits and plans and such as an incentive to get you to work at their company. And if they didn't have that option as an incentive, they would have to pay you more.
Right. So I think part of the problem, and I think a lot of people have expressed this, is, you know, if this government option had worked out when they were first drafting the healthcare legislation, none of this would have, you know, if they had restructured it so that there was that government option,
the public option.
Right, it wouldn't have been a problem. And I mean, yeah, that's probably true, but other things would have been an issue, like getting it passed. But I mean, I think we're kind of stuck with what we have right now, at least for a while. And if you can't get these corporations, if for-profit corporations can start holding religious beliefs that are more important, essentially, that's what they've said, than their employees, I mean, that's a huge problem.
Right. I mean, it seems like as long as we're going to have an employer-based healthcare system nationally, which, as you said, seems like it's going to be around for a while, I think part of the idea of the Affordable Care Act and sort of this general principle is Democrats are saying, okay, as long as we're going to go along with this, all the plans have to cover a certain minimum set of things.
Right.
And as an employer, to create, you know, incentives and such, you can have lower deductibles and lower copays and everything, right? Make the plan more attractive to the employee from the cost perspective or something like that, or have extra goodies like, oh, you get even more checkups or something like that, right? But that you can't lower the bar to make it easier to raise the bar, in the sense of, okay, all plans start out with nothing and then we just add things on top of that. It has to be, you know, the plans all have to cover the same basic things. In this case, has to cover different types of contraceptives depending on what works best for women. And this seems to be getting lost in the debate. I think if conservatives want to keep an employer-based healthcare system, they need to be willing to have these plans be blanket plans that cover everything and then are modified on top of that. You know, they have to have those certain minimums, or else it becomes the role of government to step in and start either mandating these things or funding them with taxpayer dollars or whatever.
Right. And I think a major issue is, in general, kind of that ideology that Obamacare isn't working. And instead of just, as they have frequently tried, to repeal it, instead the new strategy is to chip away at, you know, the main features like you've just outlined, so that it's not as effective as it was intended to be.
Right, because then it becomes a self-fulfilling failure.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just, I don't... The other thing about this, too, is, like, it doesn't come up enough, which is they're trying to say consequence-free sex. That was Eric Erickson's phrase that ended up reverberating around the internet, which is, you know, why should companies be paying for your consequence-free sex or whatever? Well, okay, first of all, I mean, I think most of the people using contraception are married, but also beyond that, there's also the whole population of people who are using them for other things, because some of these things have other side effects since they're hormonally based and are sometimes, you know, there's off-label or semi-off-label uses for them for, you know, controlling migraines and things like that, right? So I don't know why they have to get so invested in the nitty-gritty details of, well, why are you using it or whatever?
Right, and why are you using Viagra? Sorry, every time it gets me. They still provide that, by the way, Hobby Lobby, in their insurance plan.
Yeah, well, their religious beliefs are very selective, given that they are also still covering other forms of contraceptives.
Right, and I think I read something. They pay their, you know, employees more than minimum wage from the get-go. They provide insurance in general, so it seems kind of like along the rest of their ideologies, kind of, you know, like you said, 2.5 years back, all of a sudden, this is a religiously held belief.
Yeah, there's been a whole bunch of articles. It's sort of this full court press to be like, well, they're not that bad. Look at all the great things that they do besides this stupid thing that they did. But there's also been other controversies. I mean, I think some of their locations one point we were refusing to sell Hanukkah-related things, craft things and stuff, and then they got in trouble for that, and they had to go relax that. I don't know. I don't really understand why a craft store has to be religious in nature in any respect, but whatever. You know, Jesus was really into Etsy.
he liked to crochet. It relaxed him.
Yeah, well, how did he wipe people's feet? First, he had to make the whole rag.
Exactly. Himself. And he got all of his supplies from Hobby Lobby.
There was a lot of glitter involved.
Oh my God, I just imagined Jesus with a glitter bomb. The other thing that was a large part of this case in general was kind of the slippery slope of possible other religious objections that could come up, although the Supreme Court attempted to be like very narrow in saying that this only applies to, you know, abortion-related drugs or something. But Justice Ginsburg made a few points in her dissent about other corporations that were religiously affiliated, whether they be affiliated with Scientology or Jehovah's Witnesses, and kind of the things that they object to, such as blood transfusions, antidepressants, anesthesia, that sort of thing. All these different medicines and different things that come from certain origins that they might object to based on their religion, would that also become an issue because of this decision?
Right. I mean, it's just once you open that door... Because a lot of people were saying, even though this was supposedly very narrowly decided, none of the arguments presented by the majority couldn't be applied to anything else, basically.
Exactly.
Like, all of them could be cross-applied to any other thing. And, you know, it's just a question of how is this going to be used later. I mean, the court has long made a habit of basically deciding whatever the heck it wants to decide and then coming up with a justification. I mean, this goes back to, you know, the oldest decisions in the Supreme Court's history. But the question is, you know, because it is theoretically based on precedent, they tend to weaponize certain precedents and say, oh, well, so you see right here, this court said such and such or whatever. I mean, it's like the whole...
I mean, you hope that, you know, they'll be like, well, that's not what we meant. You're looking at it too broadly, but... I mean,
might not be the same people next time it comes
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
Yeah, and even in fact, one of the things that happened right away was that there was, based on this decision, in part, there was an emergency request for a stay, or at least it probably emboldened them to make this emergency request. There's this other separate case involving religious freedom and leadership, this time for nonprofits that are religiously identified, not religious hospitals, not, you know, religious corporations, but religious nonprofits. So Wheaton College, the evangelical college in Illinois, had an emergency request. They wanted a temporary stay on until their appeal had been dealt with, because I guess they'd lost the most recent round in their lawsuit. And they said, and this, I do not understand the logic here at all, but basically the Obama administration had kind of thrown up their hands and said, okay, we're just tired of fighting all of you on this religious freedom thing. And if you really don't want to provide it in your insurance coverage, you're not a corporation, you're not a religious hospital, you're a nonprofit. Okay, you don't want to provide it in your insurance plans. Fine. Just sign a piece of paper that says that your entity has a religious objection, and then the insurance company still has to provide it under the plan because all the plans have to have these certain minimums, but that the company doesn't have to pay for this. I think part of their argument here is, well, that doesn't really make any sense because ultimately we're still going to pay for it anyway because we still have to pay for the plans in general. But anyway, Wheaton College and a number of these other nonprofits have said that merely signing the piece of paper is somehow an infringement of their religious freedom. There's 122 nonprofits in this lawsuit, including Wheaton, and they say that signing an opt-out form for someone to be able to get the contraception from their insurers without the company's involvement violates their religious liberty because they should be able to determine if their employees get contraception. I mean, this is now the most bold iteration of trying to enforce this kind of employer version of things onto the employees. And there was a very, very stinging dissent by the three female justices on the Supreme Court. You know, Ginsburg had written the dissent in the Hobby Lobby case. This was a dissent on this emergency stay request that was written by Sotomayor and joined by Ginsburg and Kagan. Basically, their attorney is trying to say this is a permission slip for abortion, even though it's contraceptives, not anything related to abortion. And this accommodation deal that the Obama administration had worked out, this so-called permission slip thing that they had worked out with these nonprofits, Justice Alito, in his Hobby Lobby ruling, his opinion there, had said, well, this proves that there's some flexibility to it. So if it's flexible enough to allow the nonprofits out of it, then it should be flexible enough for these corporations. And then they're basically turn around and the same five justices saying, oh, here's your emergency stay that you wanted because of whatever. And so now, as Sotomayor says, suddenly this accommodation thing that was sufficient before, 2 days earlier, is suddenly out the window.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they're taking advantage of kind of the political atmosphere in that sense where, you know, they have a W on their side, so why not push for more?
And they've been doing that since the 1980s, but...
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Ever since Roe versus Wade.
Yeah. I mean, that was a big loss for them. It was a very splintered decision. That wasn't even a 5-4 decision. And then they kind of got in gear in the 1980s, you know, less than 10 years later, saying, okay, we need to start organizing to get every seat in the court filled with social conservatives. Not just the Supreme Court, but every single level so that we can position people to be on the Supreme Court later. And they kind of managed to lock that up about 2005, finally. But I just wanted to quote, before we close out, quote this line from Sotomayor's dissent on this emergency request. Quote, let me be absolutely clear. I do not doubt that Wheaton genuinely believes that signing the self-certification form is contrary to its religious beliefs. But thinking one's religious beliefs are substantially burdened does not make it so. Not every sincerely felt burden is a substantial one, and it is for courts, not litigants, to identify which are.
Burn.
All right. Well, Sasha, thank you so much for coming back on the show to talk about this Hobby Lobby ruling.
Always.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening to Arsenal for Democracy. Tweet us your comments at AFDRadio or email AFDRadio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Wednesdays. You can also hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern. Special thanks to my voiceover man, Justin. You can follow his work at the Digitized Ramblings of an 8-Bit Animal from 8BitAnimal.com. You can get additional commentary at ArsenalForDemocracy.com daily, as well as links to articles discussed today. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message. Good night.